Good morning, and welcome to the Driller Newscast. I'm your host, Brock Yorty. In this week's episode, we will discuss Maine's granting authority to the Passamaquoddy tribe to regulate its drinking water, opening up door to greater sovereignty. Next, we'll dig into the latest discussion of Colorado's water, where Nebraska is proposing a canal to guarantee their share of water from the South Platte River Compact of 1923. Our main story of the week will be part two of our series on hiring the next generation, titled, They Just Want to Jump Right Into Being Management. But before we get into all of this great information, let's talk safety. For this week's safety topic, I want to talk heat-related illnesses. And it's the first week of May. Temperatures continue to climb. Climate change is real. And we on the job sites need to make sure we have plenty of water, good shade, some electrolytes when needed, and recognizing when our people are not feeling right and that we need to get them into some shade and get some more water into them. So what are the three stages of heat illness? It starts with heat illness symptoms, right? Dehydration, weakness, irritability. We have plenty of three-day weekends coming up. And we have lots of great colleagues that are going to spend as much time they can on the boat, fishing, behind the grill, and they're going to drink a lot of adult beverages. So now it's 6:30 Tuesday morning, the day after that three-day weekend. Everybody ought to have two bottles of water in their hand and drinking. We need to get rehydrated. We need to be looking at electrolytes. It's not time for a cup of coffee and then a Monster or something like that. We need to be hydrating our body for all of the extracurriculars we had all weekend. Second set, heat exhaustion symptoms. Those include headaches, dizziness, fainting, weakness, confusion, severe hydration, can't quench that thirst, and then they get nauseous. This is the time we need to be looking to get our colleague, our teammate into the shade and worrying about their core body temperature going up and realizing that we may be almost past the tipping point. As leaders, we need to have a good heat indexed app so that we all know what the temperature for the day is going to be and what the feel like is going to be. OSHA has a fantastic heat index app that we should all be utilizing. We need to make sure we're providing water and electrolytes and understanding that it should be 2 to 3 waters per one bottle of that electrolyte drink that we choose. When I worked in the Atacama Desert, or in other places in the world where I didn't understand the language very well, one thing they did better than we do here in North America is when somebody didn't look right, they said, hey, what's going on? You know, they'd say, gringo, we need to get you some water. And part of that was because we were in an isolated location. And if I had succumbed to heat exhaustion, we don't have the first world technology that we have here in the States or the 6 or 8 minute away ambulance that can start running fluids and start cooling our core body temperature. So we need to start to do the same thing. When Bob starts feeling weird or irritable or confused and we say, hey, man up, we need you to start shoveling faster. In reality, we need to get a bottle of water in his hand and get him into the shade. We need to set up breaks when our heat index app is telling us that this is what happens in the amount of time we're working. Because next we jump into heat stroke, and those symptoms include confusion. They stop sweating because we're out of fluids in our body. They can pass out. They can have seizures or fits. At this point, we get them into the shade. We may not be able to get water into them, and we better be calling the professionals to come. If you look at professional sports or college sports, they have bags alongside the sideline with ice and tubes to run water through them to reduce that core body temperature, because we're seeing phenomenal athletes cramp up and start having issues and get into heat exhaustion. And they're conditioned much better than many of us. So as leaders, we need to be smart about how our men and women work in the field, what shade we provide them, and what is our triage plan. Our triage plan cannot be to throw him in the front seat of the pickup truck and turn the air conditioning on and hand him a bottle of water. Our triage plan starts in the morning. I had a great mentor boss that said, hey guys, it's going to be super hot today. I want you to drink 3 bottles of water on the way to the job site. And now, as a team mentality that everybody has each other's back, every time we go to the cooler and we grab a bottle of water, we grab one for the crew because we all need to be hydrating. That moment we feel a quart low, we're thirsty. The moment we're thirsty, we're a quart low. And we need to be hydrating to stay great and be able to perform. Especially since we're bringing out water and great resources out of the ground, it's ironic that we don't remember to continue to hydrate properly. Be safe out there. Now on to the news impacting the groundwater industry this week. Maine has granted the Passamaquoddy tribe authority to regulate drinking water, opening the opportunities to having greater sovereignty over their water on their lands. Governor Janet Mills signed a bill into law a week ago that gives the Passamaquoddy tribe at Pleasant Point the right to secure clean drinking water by drilling wells on tribe-owned land and working with the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency instead of state agencies. The tribe has long been frustrated by the poor water quality provided to them. The proposal would amend the Maine Indian Land Claims Settlement Act of 1980 to give tribes in the state the same rights as other tribes across the nation. You can see in the Supreme Court right now that they denied another tribe in Maine ownership over a river with the same namesake. We can go into the Navajo tribe, who is requesting access to water in Lake Powell, which is very low. We covered that last week because the access to Lake Powell water is a more efficient access water point than the Colorado River. It comes back to the doctrine that we continue to talk about equitable apportionment. And of course, a tribal nation on their land should have access to the groundwater that is below them. This is a great opportunity for drilling companies to collaborate with these tribes and help provide a better resource for water. And the fact that for decades, this tribe and many tribes in Maine have been treated their water as a municipality and how it's regulated and where we're going beyond this. This is a big piece of water doctrine again, and we all need to be paying attention to this, working with our state associations and our national associations. Next, into Colorado and Nebraska, right off of the Associated Press from mid-April. Nebraska's Governor Pete Ricketts signed a law Monday that will allow the state to move forward with plans to build a canal in Colorado to divert water out of the South Platte River because of fears about Colorado's increased water use. We see these same things with Texas, New Mexico, and Colorado discussing this. In the Colorado River, the Navajo Nation wanting water from Lake Powell opposed to the Colorado River because of ease of access and quality. Ricketts proposed the canal project to help protect Nebraska's water rights as the population of Colorado's Front Range increases. Colorado officials have questioned the need for it. The South Platte Water Compact was in 1923, and this is when we first discussed there being a canal. Ricketts states, "Water is our most important natural resource after our people. We need to continue to manage, protect, and steward it here in our state. The law will allow Nebraska to begin work on roughly $500 million canal project, but the measure includes only $53 million to design the project and potentially secure purchase options on land that might be used in the future." Again, the doctrine for equitable apportionment and each state having the access to the amount of water required as our populations increase. We as state groundwater associations and national need to be looking at this and seeing where funds are being diverted and how we can help and how we can be stewards and show our industry's value at providing water in areas that we're considering other options, including a $500 million canal. But securing water a century after a compact has been put into place, we're going to continue to see more of. And now for our featured driller, our featured industry professional this week, I have a great industry colleague, friend, one of the first Canadians that, as I started traveling Canada as a salesman for Jeffco, reached out and let me come hang out on his job sites. I once locked my keys in my truck on one of his job sites. Dwayne Graff. Dwayne, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Good to see you again, Brock. My name's Dwayne Graff. I'm working with my company called Well Initiatives Limited, and our background is sort of it's a combination of drilling, well and pump maintenance, rehab, and as well as some diagnostic services. So we've got a full range of geophysical equipment, as well as a couple of drilling rigs, and primarily the focus is municipal water supply or larger commercial type projects. And so what else do you want to know, Brock?
How the heck did you get into the drilling industry? How did drilling get into your blood?
So that's an interesting story, right? So when I was finished high school, I didn't know what I wanted to do, like a lot of people. And I ended up taking a year off and just took a regular job at a gas station and worked. And then I decided I'm going to go to college. I was going to be a game warden, of all things. And so I went to Sir Sanford Fleming in Lindsay. And that is where the drilling program is for most of Canada. I think it's the only one in existence right now. There may be one running in Alberta, I'm not sure. And through the common semester program, I quickly learned that I didn't really care a lot about different types of ducks and fish as much as I thought I did. And so my choice then was to move either to geology or drilling. And I actually chose geology. And upon graduation, I ended up getting a job with a groundwater contractor that did mostly municipal well pump servicing and maintenance stuff. So no drilling, but we were always had drilling companies that we partnered with on projects. And I can still really remember the day that I walked on the first job site and saw a fully outfitted 15W Gardner Denver. And I took a look at that and I'm like, yeah, this thing's pretty cool. We need to get my hands on this. And after a few years, I started my own business. And then after another 5 or 7 years, there was an opportunity to acquire another drilling business. So we did that, merged the services together, and that was 12 or 13 years ago now, and now we're focused on a lot of the bigger and more interesting work. So it was almost by accident in a way that I got into the industry, but it's turned out to be one of the things that I really enjoy and really inspired to work in the industry and accept the technical challenges that come with each project.
What is one of the biggest lessons you've learned in the drilling industry?
I think the biggest lesson that I have learned is to be open to the others that are around you, and pay attention, because you can learn an infinite amount of information and technique, and ultimately those things are all skills that you can adapt that are going to save you time and money and make you better at what you're going to do. And interestingly enough, when I started, and I don't think this is even different today, a lot of those people that are, the real experts and the guys that are really good and know what they're doing, they're often the most introverted, and they don't talk a lot, they don't say much. And so you have to take your time to open yourself up to let them know that, hey, you want to learn and help me, get as good as this as you are. And I took that approach with a couple of people that were, really fantastic drillers, and I was able to learn a lot in a short period of time, which, helped me get to where I am today. And I think the other thing about this industry is, the first person that you run into that says they know everything, they don't. If I always look back at that, the Green Bible, the Johnson Groundwater and Wells book, and someone once said to me, they handed me the book when I'd first seen it, and they said, if you know 10% of the information in this book, you're going to be a wizard. And I still think it's true, because there's still so much stuff in there that I don't know, and a lot of others don't know. So there's always opportunity to learn and develop as you move forward, which is one of the saving graces of the industry. Because if you're not interested in what you're doing, what's the point, really?
I couldn't agree more, and I don't pretend to ever know what's in the Groundwater and Wells book, other than I have now put enough tabs and bookmarks into it that it's probably over. It's almost like I might as well just open the book from page one and read, because I've dog-eared or highlighted something on nearly every page, and it's an invaluable resource. And I think Marvin Glockfelty's Art of Water Wells is just equally a wonderful book. And I think Tom Hanna and Schneider's book, Operational Stages of a Well, are three books that we should have. Heck, they should probably become audiobooks one day. Maybe we can get Morgan Freeman or somebody fun to read and teach us while we're driving down the road.
Indeed, absolutely.
Well, I want to thank Dwayne for coming on today. And if you would like to be our featured driller, featured geologist, like we have, driller geologist here, industry professional, a Fleming alum, because I'm sure I'm going to get a couple more on here in the next months to come, email me questions@askbrock.com and we'll set up a time. It's an easy interview, three questions, and we'll just have some fun doing it, share some knowledge, inspire that next generation. Thanks, Dwayne.
Thanks again, Brock. It's been a pleasure.
Always. For our main story of the week, this is part two of Hiring the Next Generation, titled, They Just Want to Jump to Being Management. The common theme in the drilling and construction industry is that the new generation is entitled. But have we ever considered how this perception became the new normal? Today, there are over 16 million students enrolled in high school, with roughly 3,650,000 graduating seniors this year. They all have the ability to enter the full-time workforce. As we dive into this, in 1990 marked the lowest high school enrollment, with just 11,300,000 in attendance. So you consider those are the individuals that have been working as our laboring workforce and have built themselves into credible, great industry experts. But we have now started this war on knowledge, be it if it's a four-year university or a trade school or professional development. We compare this to time in the field on the platform, and experience is knowledge, and time is knowledge, and books are knowledge, and we need to recognize this and move past it. A study performed by the Education Credit Management Corporation, whose mission is to inspire and facilitate improvements that affect educational outcomes for students. This study showed that 86% of high school graduates today feel pressure to get a four-year degree. We've seen this for the last 2 decades. However, when they're asked why, it's because they want to build their own way. They want to have purpose. 50% of all of these high school students today believe they can be successful without a four-year degree. They want to learn skills and become productive parts of our industry, of building, of humanity. The Bureau of Labor Statistics data shows about 160 million workers in the United States, with 7.6 million of these workers working in the construction industry. Where am I going with this? The median pay in the construction industry is $37,250. That's about 18 bucks an hour. Workers with a bachelor's degree can still earn more and are less likely to be unemployed. Those with a bachelor's degree have a median pay of $55,000 a year. In the US workforce, 65% of workers do not have a secondary degree. So where are our workers coming from? How are we training them? And when we look at that 7.6 million construction workers, where does that break down to the industrial drilling industry? There is a big uptick in the number of jobs with a median pay of $55,000 a year that don't require four-year degrees. And you know, this continues to increase in all 50 states, including in fields of construction. This is according to Georgetown University and their study on median pay throughout the country versus jobs of degreed individuals versus non-degreed individuals. Our next generation of new hires is not entitled. They've just been taught to get a good job that allows them to have a house and a car and a family and pay for daycare and be able to go on vacations and enjoy their weekends. They need a secondary degree. And as we drill deeper, we have young men and women who are being guided away from skilled trades because counselors no longer have that ability to promote those. Sure, in some rural areas, there are still vocational centers and there are other avocations for farming and construction, but it's geographical. So our new generation feels forced to attend a four-year university or a two-year associate school in order to find their way so they can be purposeful to our industry. These same students didn't have access to shop class or vo-tech schools as we did 15 years ago. And when they do attend a trade school, they spend that summer building, whatnot, how much of it is in drilling? When they're attending these trade schools, they're not studying industrial drilling. They're studying all the documented processes that we have for building a home, for being a plumber, for electrician, for roofing, for mechanics. When a study was done last year for 10,000 high school students, if they would choose to be a barista or a welder, over 55% said they would rather be a barista. Why is that? We see it done every day. We can step into any major coffee shop and we can watch them, and they have a training program. Whereas welding takes time and precision, and not everybody's a good welder. And our onboarding process to get there is much more difficult. I don't know how many baristas there are in our country. I'm sure there's a lot, but we know, and I've said this number several times now, there are 7.6 million construction workers. With those in this profession of construction, the highest paid jobs are electricians, plumbers, pipe fitters, and carpenters. Of that 7.6 million that work in construction, roughly 1.2 million of these workers are operating construction equipment in mining and working with drill rigs. We can look into the oil and gas numbers, and it's 280,000 men and women that work on drill rigs. We can look into the mining industry, and there's 573,000 that work in mining. And the operating engineers state with heavy equipment operators, about 259,000. So where does that leave us as we drill into this? 1 to 2% of that 7.6 million trickle down into the construction workforce that would be industrial drilling operators. So as we look at median pay and opportunities and benefits, where do our next generation want to work? They want to work where they can be trained. They want to work where there is a solid onboarding process that everywhere that mining and oil and gas has seen an age gap, they've gotten better. Our larger drilling companies that have offices all over the country have gotten better at HR and training and onboarding and understanding what it takes to get these individuals motivated. And they've had smart technology and information in their hands from a very, very young age. And with that, there's been goals. And sure, we want to go back to it's the end of the soccer season and every 6-year-old got a trophy because they should and they wouldn't want to be alienated. Or I see the curmudgeon post on LinkedIn that says, if your child is uncoachable now, how are they going to be able to take feedback and be able to listen to a boss later? We as the drilling industry are very much family run. And we have used nepotism for over 100 years. And now we're looking at this new set of the next generation coming in. And when we dig into these numbers and we look at that 1 to 2%, we can't be picky if they are college students or if they are trade school students or if they're just really smart and want to get on the back of the rig and they love working with their hands. We need to embrace them all. And for those that have taken the time to go find themselves, because high school doesn't have that counselor like they used to, some do, but they had to go to college to find where their purpose needed to be and to realize that there's other ideas and there's other people they have to learn from. And when we make comments like, if your child's uncoachable now, they won't be able to follow a boss. If we're going right from high school to full-time workforce and we're learning and we become an expert and then we become a leader, and our leader that taught us was that varsity football coach that was a jerk, they're also going to be a jerk. And so now we have to look at, they don't want to be management immediately. They want to know the opportunity is there. Because as they look up to the top of the succession planning with people that aren't retiring, how is that inspiring to know, I don't know when I'm going to retire? Or the opportunity to run a piece of equipment. I don't know when Greg is going to get off the platform. It's likely going to be like the baptized by fire that we talk about often. Greg, his wife is sick and she has to go to the hospital and he's got to be there. You're running the rest of this job. We have to look at our training and our onboarding like the trade schools. And we have, like Dwayne Graff talked about, Fleming College. And next week we'll have Jim Smith on to talk about that talent pool. But that talent pool, they are very highly sought after. And so we have to build our own training programs. And sure, we have some online universities and we have field camps and we have things happening. But again, what happens when that young man or woman hits the field and they said, you know what I learned in the hydro field camp? Or do you know what I learned at the drilling school put on by a rig manufacturer? And the driller says, shut up, dummy. Everything you need to know, you'll see one day. It's not the culture that's going to get us there. And these are the things that we have to consider with why they want to be management. Because when they get to be management, they get to incite change and have transformation that we need, or we're going to continue to have this awful age gap, and there's not going to be anybody left to drill. So let's remove the concept that they're all entitled and they just want to be management, and put in a concept of, these are my expectations for you to get to where you want to be. The next time a young man or woman says, how do I get your job? You should smile and realize this is the opportunity to train the next best to be better than you so you can learn more and get to grow the company. And as we look at our states and what's happening, because with the pandemic, and universities and community colleges going online, the amount of students that want to participate in those type of learning places has reduced by 30%. And it's because the college experience that taught us about our lifelong friends, and I met my wife in college. I went to college because the housing market slowed down in Michigan, and I realized I could be in school September to April and still be a productive part of my father's drill company from April 5th to Labor Day. And we need to be looking at that summer help of these good, smart individuals that have put in the time to study and learn. It takes a lot. High school, there's great expectations, but you can choose to take one science class or you can take five advanced science classes. And we see in science and engineering and physics and harder math, high school students are not taking those unless they believe they're going to a four-year school. So we need to look at the opportunity we have in college students to bring them on for that 5, 6 months and bring them into being a full-time employee after college. We can't afford to not have them. Drill rigs are $1 million. Do we need a $15 an hour employee running that piece of equipment, or can we afford to have a $25 an hour employee who also has critical thinking and science backgrounds and can continue to develop? Both are okay. It's just, where is our future going to be? And then as we look at what our states are doing, you can see state programs that are promoting trade programs. California has the California Career Center. Florida has the Apprentice program. Indiana has the Indiana Career Ready. Michigan is doing the Michigan Construction Careers. Texas has the apprenticeship program. Florida, Texas, and California are the three largest growing states and require the most construction laborers we possibly can have. Utah has the Career Center for Construction Apprenticeships. And there's many more states out there, but we have to be looking at the funds that are available and realizing right now, we have young men and women that are graduating high school that don't want to go to a four-year university because the college experience isn't what it was when it's online and you're paying the same amount of money. They want to be part of our industry, making water come out of the ground, working on the infrastructure law, and building. So next, we'll go into part three next week, and we're going to talk about expectations, retaining, and building that 21st century driller and technical expert for your company. We can do this. It's going to take a culture change, an understanding that the value of water is just as valuable as oil or mining. They've just done a better job of training and teaching than we do. I want to thank you for joining us for episode 9 of the Driller Newscast. Next week, we'll hit the final part of our main story on developing that 21st century employee. I want to thank Dwayne Graff for coming on. It was great and insightful. And we're still looking for more featured industry professionals and featured drillers. If you are a manufacturer and advertiser, we'd love to have you as a sponsor of this. You can see the content we're creating, and we're looking for those great partners to be able to continue to promote this and put it in other places and watch it grow. Be safe out there. It's getting hotter. And thank you for starting your week out with me and the driller. Check out thedriller.com. And as always, we're looking for Ask Brock questions. So that's the other thing you can find me on, and you can text me or email me, and I'll answer your question unprompted, unscripted, from the heart, and we'll learn together. Thanks, everybody.